by December, we should know where we are, and then
I think the base of this question is, in terms of the current structure, do you have the personnel that you need as the model currently is? The issue of how the structure is going to look like is something that is in the future, but currently as it stands, do you have the personnel that you need, that you require?
Chair, the answer is yes. For example, with the proclamations that have come through, we are able to kick off and investigate. We do have the necessary capacity that we require. However, we are looking to improve. Thanks.
Now, Chair, let me pause for now.
Yes.
All right. I will once again try and use yesterday's approach. True. Because if I start with Ross, it will mean you'll have to wait for 2.5 hours before you can talk. It's only good if I start with you to then talk everything you have. But if I don't start with you, it becomes a challenge. But so that we can all be able to... True. No, I'll start there. All right. No, that's fine. I'll start with Ross. Instead of two questions, make it three. But then let's cut down on the preamble to the question. Let's just ask the question. Then it becomes Ross.
Chair, I think you're quite right. It's going to take about an hour. I have a lot on my heart. to you then, Advocate Mukiri, thank you very much for the excellent presentation, as always. I'd just like to inquire with regards to the status of the SIU proclamations. We all know that the presidency needs to kickstart your process in terms of proclamations. How big is the backlog in terms of the proclamations that you await approval from the presidency? If you can't supply it to us, if you can also supply it to us in private, just following the line of questioning from the previous speaker. So that would be important, but with regards to the SIU proclamation with South African Broadcasting Corporation, the Department of Justice, 10 May 2017, the SIU finalized and submitted the motivation for this presidential proclamation. And last time, and I think that was on the, more or less the 27th, it was on the 27th of June, you've indicated the Office of the President is finalizing its review of the application for this proclamation specifically. Has it come through yet? You have that proclamation?
No, just note it down.
Okay.
As the third question.
Yes. And then I'm going to be as short as possible because of the allegation that I'm a bit long-winded. I'll take you...
No, I'll put it in a general statement.
I'm only teasing you, Chief.
No, sure.
Chairperson, yes, with regards to the active investigations on your slide 34, I've noticed the South African SABC Proclamation 29 of 2017. Perhaps Gina House, was that the information that I've also provided you? Was that included in this proclamation? Because I'd just like to make sure whether the revelation with regards to your contract worth $5.1 million awarded to Infonomics and a contract to Imagine Communications, that's now all at the SABC, worth $7.3 million. Whether that has been included in this broader scope that we've accepted that day at the SABC, you will remember that I see that the new trend is to narrow the scope and be more specific, but that day we've approved the broader scope to include bonuses, appointments and promotions, fruitless and wasting expenditure at the SABC. I assume that has all been included in your investigation. I have then also submitted 37 reports on corruption to the SABC to Mrs. House, and I'd just like to know whether, if I understand correctly, your latest feedback to us, this specific proclamation that I mentioned, whether that is included there. I just want to clarify that to make sure that we have the SABC completely covered. Thank you very much. And then, Chairperson, the third one, if I may. Is it correct? I can proceed. Yes, I've done with the outstanding proclamations, I've done with the SABC, and now it's with regards to the ongoing battle to find accountability at the local government level. Now, we have two municipalities that I flagged with Scopa. The one is Ekurhuleni and the other one is Machabeng. And I would like to know from Scopa whether I can present the full documentation to the SIU to ask for them to investigate. Those two documents I will submit to you after the meeting. It's a comprehensive document on both those on both those institutions at local level. It will be very helpful for you. A lot of work has already been done on it. And then, in conclusion, also corruption in the Free State with regards to the Vrede project. I would like to know, I will submit you with all the documents on the Vrede Dairy project through Scopa and so for your investigation. And then lastly, also the low-cost housing in the Free State. I have a comprehensive document, which is a legal document with regards to the low-cost housing, where the HOD of a department indicated there's a scandalous fraudulent scheme in that specifically low-cost housing. I have all the documents. I would like to know if I can present that to you. That concludes, Chair. Is that fast enough today? Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It's getting there.
I'm getting there. Good. I'm exercising. I'm getting there. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Can we respond to the three questions?
No, thank you, Chair. On the outstanding proclamations, as I said, you know, we have signed a MOU with the Presidency and simply to ensure that we bring in efficiencies. Remember when we motivate for the proclamation, it doesn't go directly to the Presidency. Okay, it starts off at the Department of Justice where they consider it and the Minister signs off and then refer it to the Presidency. So that process we have since, you know, put in measures to improve efficiency. But I don't have the list of the outstanding ones at the moment. We can, as the Honourable Member says, we can provide that also to the committee. Okay. On the specific one that you asked, Honourable Ross, yes, the proclamation was signed. I've got a copy of the proclamation that was signed by the President. It's been gazetted already. Thanks.
On
the issues
that he submitted.
I would like my colleague to just, you know, respond to that, but we have ensured that the scope, as we discussed at the SABC during that meeting, it covers the scope as we agreed. It will cover the employment practices issues relating to payment of bonuses and so on. You can.
No, that's fine. Can she? Okay. Whoever is responding.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. The proclamation is a little bit wider. It covering most of the aspect, but however, we're going to have to prioritize because we cannot start everything at a go. Thank you.
No, but are you responding to his question? Because it was specific. There are specific cases that he handed over to you.
If I may, thank you,
sure.
Chair. Yes, we are in receipt of the matters you referred to, Honourable Ross, and in particular the two you mentioned, Infonomics and Imagine Communication, will be covered in that investigation. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, can I take Ross's time? Just 10 minutes. Can I?
Chair, I set a good example, and then they take advantage of that example.
My fellow democratic fighting comrade. That's political cohesion, you see. Saki did a great job. He covered most of the bases. So that leaves me with having to find other bases. Chair, there are some specifics, but I want to get into. Let's just get into the specifics. And I'll put this to you. There are two SIU investigations I want to ask you about. The one is SIDMENI, if you can give us any sort of a progress report on that. as far as not going into the merits. And then the other one is on the our most famous one, the Nkandla one. You have one criminal referral from that matter, and you have one civil referral. Now, the civil referral relates to Nancy Makanya, and that's in your document, and the 155 million. What is happening with the criminal referral on that matter? Because that was 2014, your report, and I see you've given a progress report on the civil matter, and I'm grateful for that. Do we honestly expect to be able to collect 155 million rand from Mr. McCullough? Have we done, and I think, Mr. Matiba, we've spoken before, you know, I'm very familiar with this industry. Has any sort of background work been done to find out if Mr. McCullough has even remotely got that kind of money? Because you've put it down as a figure that is a possible recovery. Is that based on, well, he owes us 155, so let's try to get it back, or is that based on what's he worth? Just want to know specifics on that. And we're going to have to have follow-up, Shinshu, because I've got a lot of areas I want to cover. Advocate Batibi, you refer to you want to make the SIU more profitable, so you want more work. The reality is that there is a fundamental reason why state departments use private firms rather than the SIU. And that relates, you know well, relates to capacity and relates to bottlenecks. So my question to you is, where are the bottlenecks, and is the proclamation process one of the bottlenecks? Okay, because we've seen how many have been issued, and is it one of the bottlenecks? And let's be frank with each other here. Is it one of the bottlenecks? The other bottlenecks must be identified. And then, if you go to your page related to this, your page, it's 8, where you list your charge-out rate. And if those are the figures now, I can confirm to everybody here, they're extremely cheap. Those are the figures from 2011, as I remember them. How many debts, you know, in any forensic matter, your four key areas are your forensic investigators, your chief forensic investigators, your forensic auditors, your accountants, and then your data guys. Because your data guys are the number crunchers. You take all the stuff from the field and they put it into usable, you know, spreadsheets. Can you give us, on page 10, you give us a breakdown of how many people you have. And you give us professionally qualified and skilled technical. How many of those four categories do you have? This builds on to Honorable Kikana's question. Of those four essential areas, forensic investigator, forensic accountant, and forensic data people, how many of those do you have? Because that lies at the core of your operation. Those are the people in the field doing the work. And that's what you'll agree, you know. That's what gets the matters moving quickly. So can you give us an indication of your vacancy rate there and what your capacity is there, because that's very important. And then, Chair, if I could just, the final question for now, because there are others. Let's cut to the quick here. I understand that you want to develop a capacity to finish a report and follow it through. But in the cold light of day, can you compel any other agency to act legally? Or are you left, as we are, to encourage, coerce, embarrass, nudge, wink, etc., etc., to try and get something done? Because I think if you want to look at amendments to the legislation, that's where you really need to be going. If you can't, which I suspect you can't, you need to be looking at amendments to legislation that enables you to actually walk in and say, this will happen. Otherwise, unfortunately, you are doing exactly what we are doing at great expense. That's the reality. So I'd just like your comments on where you go there. Do you have the capacity to coerce? And if you don't, let's really cut to the crunch of how we can amend legislation to actually give you that capacity. If I can leave it at those, Chair, for now.
For now, yes.
Maybe, yeah, if you don't mind. There's not much after that. But
all right, can we respond to a sort of question that he has put through?
No, thanks, Chair. The life asset demanding investigation has commenced. We have recently, a week or two ago, we have also met with the political head, the MEC responsible, taking her through the letter of engagement, taking her through our approach. We've already met with the various stakeholders, including the health ombuds. So the investigation is underway, and it's one of those investigations that would really would like to turn around, especially in the light of the Honourable Member's comment, one of those high-profile cases that we'd like to turn around as quickly as possible. So the investigation is underway. On the Nkanda matter, particularly the civil action one, the 155 million, and my colleague who's in charge of the civil proceedings, Mr. Fisaki, can comment. That has been computed based on the work that has been done in terms of the overcharges that that are alleged. So in terms of the actual recovery, we're expecting, Chair, that once the court makes its finding and makes its order, the expectation is that we should be able to recover. Whether we will recover or not is another question. I'm not aware that we have done any, sort of background work, beyond the legal work, whether we will be able to recover from Mr. Makanya himself. So, Chair, on the criminal referral, and perhaps our project director can come in here. I don't have the information at hand in terms of what the status of that. As you know, Chair, the criminal matters, this is the legislation that we're working on. The criminal matters, once we pick up criminal evidence, we refer it to the state, to the NPA. But as I said, it's really in our interest to follow up and make sure, where is that case. I'll just ask my colleague later on to comment on that. If we do have some information, if not, it's one of the information that we can provide at a later stage. In terms of capacity, Chair, as I responded earlier on, we do have the necessary resources at the moment to do our work, but the question whether we are adequately resourced, the answer to that adequately resourced is that we do require an improvement in our resources. And the adequate resourcing will result from the capacity modeling that we are doing. Currently, on the question around the vacancy rate, I think, Chair, you raised that. And this is amongst others why we're doing this organizational review. Because I would ask a question to my colleagues, particularly in the operation space, and say, can we, because when I interrogated the structure shortly after my arrival, I said, can you tell me how many forensic investigators you need in Western Cape, for example? How many forensic investigators do you need in the Eastern Cape office? You can't get a certain answer. But simply because the structures are not as defined, right? And that is why, Chair,
we would like to have that adequately defined structure. There is a structure at the moment which really indicates, you know, what is the kind of headcount, and that's why we're able to give the headcount as we get. So at the moment, I would like to just indicate that we are working on how adequately should we be resourced. How many forensic investigators should we have? We're really battling in that space of ensuring that, you know, we have to create the necessary capacity. For example, the forensic accountants, we don't have enough. I can say it now. We have got how many? About only three. Only three forensic accountants. Okay? So for me, if we continue to get the work as we're working now, we need to improve in that area. However, our resourcing model is such that we are able to, when the work builds up, we are able to get in-source the resources on a contract basis. But what I'm saying is that that's not sustainable, you know. But even if we get to a stage where we are saying this is the adequate level of resourcing, you may still see the pipeline of work coming in, so that we still need to maintain this flexibility of say, even if we have reached that what we call adequate level of resourcing, we still need to be able to, you know, insource. Our model should still allow for insourcing. Because, Chair, we can't just, you know, get in headcount at which stage, if the work, you know, goes down, which we're hoping will not, but if it does, if it does go down, it's a relative hope, simply because we want the corruption to go down, Chair.
Yeah.
But we at the moment, with the workload that we have, we would like to ensure that we increase our skills and the capacity, but not over the line, so to say. Yeah. I wonder if my colleague would have a comment on the criminal referral.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I was saying we're going to submit the report as part of the update of on all other matters.
Including the criminal referral.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. What we're probably saying is that we don't have the information now. We will go back, inquire, and then we will submit a proper update to the committee.
All right.
Yeah.
You missed the one about your legal authority to follow up.
Oh, okay.
All right. On the legal authority that we have, Chair, our legislation is sufficient in enabling us to investigate. To use the honourable member's word, we've got the powers to subpoena, we've got the powers to search and seize, and those powers are used in the instance where we do not see cooperation to get documentation and evidence. Those powers are sufficient to enable us to investigate. But at the end, we do issue remedial actions. We do recommend remedial actions, and that's the part that I addressed earlier on, that on the remedial action side, we will follow up, and if we find that there's no action taken, we have to then just follow the escalation process to ensure that the, call it, say, disciplinary action is appropriately action, so that action is taken against appropriate officials.
Sorry, I have to come in. That unfortunately doesn't get to the nub of the question. The question is can you compel? And I think what you're saying is no. So what we then have to ask ourselves is how can we get to a point where you are in a unique position to make this work? Because you see, this is all fine if people are reasonable. and follow your advice. But when people just say, "Aye, so go on, I'm not interested," then you're stuck. You walk straight into the wall. So what do we do to amend legislation to give you the power to say, "We've investigated this, and we want to drive this through to the end"?
I think that
was the nub of my question. If you can't respond because it's a policy issue, I understand. But surely that is something that we should be at grips with. Because otherwise you'll never have this consequence. You've got a bottleneck on the one side where it comes in, and you've got a bottleneck on the other side where it's not supposed to happen. And there's our problem.
Yeah, I think maybe let's take that as an observation. Because I think it's us who must actually, looking at the presentation, what have we picked up? And I think it is more for us than for them to be. And it's something that I had also noted. Commitment?
Thank you, Chair. SIU, thank you very much, because we had a lot of questions, and in some areas we thought you are able to even arrest people. Now I see that is out of your mandate. But then my first concern, Chair, currently Auditor General, with the committee of the Auditor General, they are busy with the bill, drafting a bill that will then ensure that the recommendations from the Auditor General are actually not necessarily binding, but are taken seriously by the department, giving them such powers. I think, SIU, you explained earlier on that you have written to the minister and you got responses in terms of the legislation and how can it be amended, and there's a promise that there's an upcoming judicial amendment that are going to take place. But what I would advise you is that you need to be in touch more often, because in particular the issue of bills slips through the fingers in Parliament. And before you know it, that response will be the same response you will get January next day. Oh, you're okay. We were supposed to deal with you. Please get on with it. Because that's the only way you'll get what Comrade Tim is asking about. And then I just want to find out, within your powers, you can institute the civil litigation to recover state funds or prevent the loss from occurring again. So when you litigate, you're still liable for the payments, or are you able to ask the person you're litigating against to be liable for court? That's my first question. Because if then you have to ask the department or the other institution to do it, they do just as they wish. Or at times people just get off scot-free. And on those litigations as well, are you able to sanction pension of people that just, once they realize that you are sitting on them, you are on them in terms of catching their maladministration and ultimately discovering that they are the actual culprits, then people have a tendency of resigning. Are you able to sanction their pension fund so that the state can get its money back before they get everything away? That's just my first question on litigation. But then my interest, Chair, again, is on the whistleblowing
I tried to listen in terms of how do you initiate your, who initiates your, the cases that come to you, and how do you then take it along. And in particular, where you are saying we must encourage the departments to come to you, not go the forensic route, and yet you still have only 3 forensic experts. And the departments take that route to establish if there is really maladministration, then they come to you afterwards, if you have that power. But most importantly, is it only institutions, or do you accept whistleblowers that are bringing documents to you, like what Ross was saying, is going to give you documents right now? Do you then accept that and start initiating a case out of that? Thanks.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. We thank you for the advice relating to the legislative changes. The legislative change that is likely to be in the Judicial Amendment Bill at the moment is the one that really regularizes our pre-proclamations activities so that we can be able to use our powers. We are also busy with other proposals that will be in the legislation that will probably go into the next round of legislation. And that will deal with our funding model. It will probably also deal with the issue around our remedial action. And we will incorporate some provision on that to make sure that our recommendation are acted on. The wording of the legislation will probably still have to not just work it out. And take it through the process, but we really appreciate that. On the civil litigation, Chair and Honourable Members, we do carry the costs of litigation. So going forward, I think we'll probably have to just, but taking into account the Honourable Member's comment. We would, because the legislation empowers us to take action or civil action in our own name, we would like to be in charge of the process, just so that, you know, we're able to drive the outcome. So that's the cost part. We do pay the cost of, you know, legal representation. We do still work through the state attorney, though, to ensure that, you know, the legal representatives are properly appointed, but the costs still come back to us. Are we able to sanction their pension? At the moment, to do that, if there's a realization that we'll have to do that within a civil legal process, we'll probably have to get a court order to do that. On our own, we can't really give an order to get the pension not be paid out. We've seen that as a practice, Chair, that you know, and more often, and when we finalize our reports, you'll find that, you know, most often the state institutions are saying, no, we couldn't take action against X because he has resigned. You know, it's almost a worrying situation. But we'll have to make sure that you know, as we have identified it, come up with measures which can assist us. If we need to, you know, institute proceedings to get the pension freezed, so to speak, then we'll have to follow that legal process. Yeah. So on the whistleblowing, yes, I mean, when we get referrals by whistleblowers, amongst others, they submit documentation. So we are open to whistleblowers to submit documentation when they whistleblow, so to speak, and then we do assess those documentation, then we start this pre-proclamation phase of assessment, and until it leads to the proclamation.
We do also, you know, welcome the state institutions also refer on their own accord, and they refer with the necessary documentation. I'm not sure if I've covered. Chair, just maybe on the legal cost. I mean, you would know that depending on the outcome of the case, we have the opportunity to ask the court, and what do you call, you pray. You pray for the court to issue the cost on the other party, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what's attendant there.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Advocate Mutibi and your team, thank you for the presentation. Chair, my questions are just going to be merely like a follow-up, because I think they've already been covered. Or probably maybe it will be a request on the first one is on the proclamation of the SABC, which you have already responded. But I just have an interest in knowing, in terms of the team that is doing the work, if the staff complement, is it already there in place doing that part of work, in terms of their own personal skills, on how does the SIU put those particular person in terms of allocating a person into that job. So actually I wanted to add to the list that Chairperson, I was proposing that maybe if he can, because probably cannot talk about the matter maybe on air, if we can be provided with the information in terms of that team that is working. I think you get what I'm trying to say. You get what I'm trying to say. And then, secondly, on the issue of the staff complement, in terms of your, I can see here on page 10, slide 10, where you've raised the issue of employment equity. I believe, Advocate Mutibi, that when you look at it in terms of your transformation, in terms of your demographics, it doesn't look satisfactory. I don't know the proposed one that you got, and how do you address the issue of equity and demographics, in terms of how are you going to transform SIU? I think it's very much key. And linking to that one is the issue of if you've got a shortage of those people, linking it to it that you cannot, it's really difficult to do most of the work because of your shortage. Do you have any consultants who are doing work for the SIU, and if you have, how many are they, how long are they contracted, what is it that they're contracted for, how much are you paying them? As well, on the issue of the investigations, because it's not going to be new questions really, it's just an addition to the list. There's an issue which SIU was investigating on the Msunduzi municipality. There was a case there. If we can get a progress report on that one. I think also on ESCOM, Chairperson colleagues, because ESCOM has been lately being investigated by everybody. If maybe we can get the progress report as well on the issue of ESCOM, which case is that one, and probably how long are you going to finish it. There's an issue of, Chairperson, this one is not here, but I think I've heard other members mentioning some other issues. There's an issue of Hillcrest, you know? I don't know whether it was in issue that is against the SIU, if maybe we can get an update report on that one. I did read it about it in the papers, I think, probably maybe last year. And Chairperson, I'll pause here. You said three questions, so this time I have complied, and I know that you are speaking about me. I've complied. I will come again the second round. Thank you.
Okay. No, thanks. That's good. No, you will get another opportunity to, okay, advocate the team. Can we respond to the question that she has raised?
No, thank you very much, Chair. On specifically on the SABC investigation, yes, we've got a team in place that is led first and foremost by the program director, Ms. Gina House, who's here, and the report into the project director, and ultimately to me. We are satisfied that that team will be able to deal with the investigation. But if, Chair, if there's a need to provide the names and skill level and so on, we can do that and provide it privately to the committee. Chair, the issue around capacity and forensic investigators, we do have forensic investigators that are employed by SIU. The point around the three resources that we had is forensic accountants. Forensic accountants, their focus is different from the forensic investigators. Accountants, those that we have, in fact, all of them are CAs, qualified CAs with knowledge around forensics. So they are used, obviously, to analyze the numbers and so on. But we found that they get stretched, right? So there's a need that side to improve. But at the moment, we're really not unable to turn around our investigations. Although we found that they are stretched, and we will look at that. In terms of staff complement, Chair, on the transformation side, transformation is an inherent imperative in the business. We will ensure that as we improve on our resourcing and the employment of further resources, that we reach our employment equity targets. We do have a plan that we are working on, and we have submitted it accordingly to the Department of Labour. But we have made a note of the Honourable Member's comment that it should always, be a business imperative. We will continue on that. The question on the consultants, we do not have consultants at the moment. I know that previously, and I know, I mean, sort of few years ago, SIU's model used to include outsourcing, but that has since been changed. We don't have consultants doing work for SIU at the moment. Msunduzi Municipality, Chair, I think this, we don't have the details at the moment. We can update the committee. Will provide the update on that. ESCOM, Chair, we've provided one of the reports, I think, that we have mentioned was around ESCOM. If you look on page 21 of our slides, is of proclamation R2 of 2012, ESCOM Holdings. The report has been submitted, so that investigation has been finalized. You'll see there that the recommendations, there was quite a number of disciplinary recommendations, about 3,475, but mainly those were really around conflict of interest and, employees doing business with ESCOM and so on. So those are part of those that if we you know, really gear up around follow-ups, we should be able to find a report of whether they were all actioned or not. Okay. So that investigation has been completed. Just to look on the Hillcrest, I'm not aware of any Hillcrest matter that we are dealing with, and I've just checked with the project director. We're not aware of any. Chair, we will welcome if there's any details that we can get, we can probably further investigate.
Just if I might want to say, I will gladly provide the information on Hillcrest.
Okay.
Okay. I wanted to make a follow-up on the ESCOM issue. Or is it same? Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Don't mind him.
I don't mind him. We're sent by my branch.
Continue. Ask your question.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the disciplinary recommendation, so are you saying in terms of this number is the 3,475 officials which the investigation been able to identify different cases? Or maybe if you can just talk to this 3,475 so that maybe we understand it better.
Thank you, Chair. The project director can probably also add on. But the report that has been submitted, you know, during the investigation, the focus point in the main, amongst others, has been to when you investigate, you do checks around conflicts of interest. You know, then you run your data of employees and check if there's anyone who is part of a company that's doing work with ESCOM. Right, for example. So the investigation revealed that this is the number of people who had conflict of interest. It's in one investigation, not sort of various investigations. And then there's this criminal referral two of them. Which we can probably provide the details around that, but that's simply probably to differentiate that those are not conflict of interest disciplines. You want to add?
All right.
Chair, thank you. I just want to follow up on some issues and some others. Advocate, I didn't get an answer from you earlier about the bottlenecks, where you perceive the bottlenecks to be. Also, you didn't fully answer my question. I asked you how many forensic investigators you had, how many forensic accountants you had. You gave me answer 3, so you got that. But you didn't tell me how many forensic data people you've got. So I need to get an answer on that. Okay. And then we... this issue of consultants. Consultants in this particular industry is not a swear word. Okay. Because colleagues need to understand that you have a basic infrastructure, and sometimes you're busy, and sometimes you're quiet. And if you're carrying a hold of investigators when you're quiet, that's an incredible drain. So you have to use consultants. You have to use outside firms from time to time. So I think that, you know, we've got to be careful about this narrative of we want everybody to use the SIU when the SIU is not up to doing the amount of the volume of work that comes from the departments, and then starting to slate outside firms who are doing good work. We've got to be very careful about that. They should be our partners. They should be our partners.
No. No. Point of order. In a subtle way, Chairperson. Honorable team, I'm asking a question. I've been answered. It's not up to him to explain. I think as a public accounts committee, we've got to ask about consultants.
Okay.
Please, honorable team, please.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chawani, for your interruption. Okay, here's the situation. Okay, and we're trying to be nice up to now, but let's get hard. Advocate Motibi said earlier that he, when you get busy, you use consultants. Right? Now, I'm not going to take another interruption. I'm asking an online question. Okay? All right. I asked a question. You conceded that when you get busy, it was one of the other members, you do use consultants. Okay? All right. And then you told Honorable Tulwani that at the moment you're not using consultants. Okay? Now, that may be the case, but you do use them from time to time. All I'm trying to say is on the one hand, you criticize departments' use of outside firms because you'd rather that they use you, but then you have to concede that you're not up to the task. And that's the problem. And that comes back to my bottlenecks question. Where are the bottlenecks that are causing it? And also the fact that, and I'll be generous that you weren't sidestepping my question, but my question about how many forensic investigators you've got and how many forensic data guards have you got? Answer those two questions. I don't think you have the capacity. I would love you to have the capacity, but we need to be realistic about these matters. And then I'm very concerned about the fact that you conceded earlier that we can't compel anybody to do anything at the end of the day. And then finally, the only other thing I wanted to raise was is two other things. In your spreadsheets, you put the amount, estimated amount of saving by your actions that you took. How do you come to that estimated amount? Is that an estimate, a guess? I'd like to know how you arrive at. In all your schedules, you say amount to be saved. How you get there? And then finally, a matter of great concern to those involved on the SABC SIU investigation. Could I engage with your staff member afterwards? There's a specific group of people that were SABC employees that were part and parcel of the problems. But because they were involved in certain units, they may well be now working with the SIU on your investigation. In other words, you may have the proverbial mole in your investigation. Can either yourself or your staff member, sorry, ma'am, I forget your name, verify that nobody is from SABC is participating in the investigation, or if they are, can we engage to... I'll tell you the name that I'm concerned about, and then you can tell me yes or no. But there are great concerns. You may know who I'm talking about, maybe not, but and if you can give us any level of assurance there. Okay, that's all I have at the moment. Thank you, Chair, and that'll be me.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate the questions. On the number of forensic investigators, I think, Chair, to be... honest, we'll have to come back with the exact number of forensic investigators. The numbers that we have given are really not as specific, and I wouldn't want to give the committee an incorrect number. The number that I'm certain about, and my colleague has indicated to me that it's really so that the forensic accountants, which have got different skills from forensic investigators, are only three. And those are the accountants, number crunchers. But the investigators who are your lawyers and, you know, those we've got a number of them, and we can give the number of how many do we have at the moment. Chair, on the consultants,
I've got to follow up there. Once again, I'm being sidestepped. I spoke about data consultants as well. Gee, this is exactly the problem. Advocate Matibi came here with a lovely presentation, but he's moving us away from the fact that the SIU do not have the capacity to do this work. How is it possible that the head of the Special Investigative Unit of the Republic of South Africa doesn't know how many forensic investigators he has? I'm sorry, but that's remarkable. And I said with the greatest of respect to a colleague in the same industry I was in, but that is unacceptable. And also data is incredibly important in investigations. To not know how many data people you've got. tell you this, I'm sorry, we are opening a crack here, and I hope my colleagues understand how serious this is behind that wall. And this is why consultants are used. This is why departments go to private rather than coming to SIU. We've got to understand this. We will not fix this problem until we fix this. This is going to be fixed. And sorry, Chair, there was one point I wanted to make, and I promise you this will be done. Has the department considered this tactic in terms of growing your own timber, as Treasury did under Minister Manuel many, many years ago? They were pulling people out of varsity. They were going to varsities after the first year or two, or they were attracting young people to study forensic sciences in terms of forensic financial investigations. They were encouraging them to go to those, and they were saying, we will give you a bursary, we will enable you to complete your studies, and then you come and work for the SIU for 5 years. But obviously they were doing that with Treasury, with BCom students, BCom honours, and they were encouraging them and helping them to come through, and then they were growing their own timber. I honestly want to recommend to you, if you're not doing it already, to start approaching the UNISAs, and all the universities are coming out now with forensic type studies. Offer bursaries to those young people, bring them through, and grow your own timber. So 10 years from now, you've got qualified crackerjack, best practice people in SIU. You've got a full force, and you can really nail it. Really want to recommend that to you. But please, you're moving away from your capacity, sir, and oh, I'm sorry.
Don't tear your hair.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, we need to respond to the question around headcount. If we were specifically directed, Chair, to come up with the human resource information that's required by the committee in terms of the kind of skills the committee needs to know about, how many CFIs we've got, how many FIs we have, how many legals, how many accountants, Chair, we would have provided an accurate information of that. The slide number 10 that gives information around headcount, it does indicate the level of employment, professionally qualified, skilled, technical, semi-skilled. It just gives the numbers. If there's a need for the committee for us to break it down in terms of how many chief forensic investigators we have, forensic investigators, we will do that. It's not the number that I have at the moment. In terms of consultants, Chair, at no stage did I slate consultants. At no stage did I say SIU uses consultants. I said we insource. If we become aware that our capacity is such that we cannot do a particular assignment, our model allows for us to insource. And by insourcing, doesn't mean that we appoint consultants. We employ employees of SIU. They become employees, but only on contract. Those become contract employees vis-a-vis consultants. They are not consultants at all. We still say that to the committee. We can't compel anyone to do anything. Chair, I think it's a generic statement, but I did say our work, the output of it is divided into the investigation part. We do have the powers to compel witnesses to come and be interrogated under oath. We do have the powers to search and seize evidence if required. And the aspect where we are of the view that we need to improve our legislation on is the aspect on the remedial action. There, I do say there is a necessary to propose some form of legislative assistance to ensure that we can enforce the remedial actions. At the moment, we do not have. We do it administratively at the moment to make sure that the accounting authorities take accountability to ensure that they implement the referrals.
So that's the legislative assistance that we will probably make proposals on. How do you come to the amount saved? As an example, Chair, if we identify that a contract of, say for argument's sake, 500 million has been awarded irregularly, if it's a contract of, say, 5 years, and the investigation starts, say, in the second year, and we get a declaratory order declaring the contract to be irregular in the third year, right? And a just and equitable order is given in the third year, and the contract does not proceed for the third, fourth, and fifth year. Chair, that's how we quantify the savings. And that is actual. We would have saved the state institution amounts that would have been paid irregularly for the remainder of the years that the contract has not run on. That is one of the bases that we use for the saving. That's how we quantify the amounts saved.
All right.
Chair, I'm not sure if I've missed any of the questions from the honourable member. Or the bottlenecks. Around the bottlenecks, Chair, at the moment, I did indicate that we have identified that we needed to bring in some efficiencies around the proclamation process, right? And the proclamation process, there's SIU, there's Department of Justice, and there's the President, right? And it's efficiency improvement. By inefficiency, I mean that the proclamation would, but there was initially no timelines indicated around this space, right? But when we sat down and discussed with the parties, we said, let us give ourselves timelines within which, you know, to turn around the proclamations. But it is very important to take into account that even though we can aim at a particular timeline, there is this judicial and legal requirement for any one of us to apply our minds. So if during the timeline which we have aimed, we find that there's still some queries that we need to look at, we need to identify what and how is it that we then identify those queries and address them as we apply our minds. But our interest is to ensure that we turn around that space as quickly as possible. We've given ourselves now that it shouldn't exceed 3 months, for example, to turn around the proclamation process. And remember, it goes from SIU to the Department of Justice and then only to the President. So there's multi-party involvement in this.
Okay. All right.
The comments on the bursary are there and the SABC. That's staffing.
Growing your own timber.
Sorry, honourable member on the SABC. I'm sorry about that. If you can just.
I just wanted to know if any of the staff members of the SABC were involved with the SIU unit doing the investigation in any way.
Why don't we deal with
that? I can deal with it offline.
Yeah.
That's fine. And then just a response to the growing your own timber issue of the bursary idea, I don't know if you heard my proposals. Do you have any response to, or are you doing something like that already?
No, thank you, Chair. We do have a bursary scheme. And in fact, most of our employees have taken that bursary scheme up, and they are studying. Again, if there's a need to provide details around who is on the bursary scheme, and
I think his question is before that. That is, those who are still at school, who are not yet your employees, someone who is 19, 20 years, who is still at university, linking up with them at that level, so when they graduate, they could. Yeah.
No, thank you for that.
At the moment, there isn't really much that we're doing on that score, but we have said that we need to put in place mentorship.
No.
Mentorship programs. We need to ensure that, like other companies would do, so that we increase the interest of students to take up forensic studies. But by doing that, we need to ensure that we are able to sort of take at least a certain number on the mentorship internship program. It's something that it's on our strategy, Honorable Member.
I'll give Ross and welcome you back and give you the
Thank you, Chairperson. I take it I would just like to make sure with regards to the progress on the special tribunals. That seems to, in my mind, to be a beacon of hope, you know, and a little ray of sunlight, so to speak, that you can manage yourself and that you can see that we find the consequence management that the Honourable Kikana has spoken about. Now, I'm not sure exactly where we stand in terms of those initiatives, whether there's a budgetary process and how does it fit into your financial modelling. Just a short answer in terms of that. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. As you know, that we have engaged the Department of Justice in this regard, the Court Services Unit in the Department of Justice, which is seized with the responsibility to ensure that if there are, you know, special courts or courts that needs to be established, that that is the unit that assists us. As late as yesterday, I got feedback from the responsible official. They had a process on to appoint a president, a tribunal president. But the first candidate that they were looking at fell off, and now they are busy engaging the second judge, because the initial one was the judge who is retired, you know. But now they are busy with engaging a certain judge, they didn't sort of mention the name, which that process has to now be signed off through the processes. And we are confident that, you know, if that process is completed and the tribunal president is appointed, then we should be able then to look at sort of the support structure. You know, I went myself and visited this tribunal infrastructure in Eastern Cape. There's still someone who used to work, call it as a clerk of the court there, you know, and there's some resources that can be used as of immediate, you know. And it's something that we are trying to drive with the Department of Justice, that as soon as we can have that court operational, some of the referrals, even coming from the newest proclamations, we can channel there. So Chair, we're really hoping that, and we've seen there's also budget issues, which I've been given feedback on. And the budget issues is really around if there's any additional resources that are required. And Justice is busy tying up on that one. Yeah.
Right. Comrade Kulu, the rule is 3 questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for allowing me to go to the APEX meeting with the Speaker of Western Cape Legislature. It was a fruitful meeting. And, Chairperson, the first thing that I want to say to advocate is that they're doing a sterling job. But I have the first question that I had before I left, because I had a number of questions, Chairperson. And, you know, when you look at the staff component vis-a-vis the work that they're doing, it doesn't make sense at all. The 529, and that's why when I had Combat Team
talking about the consultants. I wish if the, because we need to have a sense of how you're working. We want you to be part of our association as the Public Accounts Committee, but we need to know exactly how is your office structured, so that all these cases that you have talked about, it makes sense that how are you going to tackle those cases. You know, I have your annual report, this one. And for the, I mean, the first question will be on page 38. The key highlights, the key, I mean, you have 20 number of final investigations report submitted to the presidency between 2015 of April and 2016 of March. It's, SIU, in terms of what we are expecting them to do for the country and looking at the problems that we have, I think the achievables, they are not as convincing, you know. They are not as convincing as the number of problems that we have in the department. I've heard you when you were presenting your presentation. But it does not make sense. That's why it's very important for us to know exactly, including all your consultants. I know that you have said you don't have consultants, but when you look at page 121, it talks about all the service providers that you have, that the SCM procedures were not followed. You know, and I heard that Comrade Gekana asked about the consequences of those people who didn't follow the SCM processes. So it shows that you have the service providers. Is that Chairperson, I've lost that page before I left. But again, when I looked at your leases and the leases, it's, I mean, you are spending a lot of money in terms of leases. Do you have offices of your own? How much are you spending for your leases? And when are those contracts going to expire? But Chairperson, I want him to the first question, to look at the page 38. You know, all this, the highlights of SIU. But again, my problem, Chairperson, is that when you, I mean, a lot of departments come before SCOPA, and they tell us, all of them, most of them, I think 90% of the departments that appear before SCOPA, they have outsourced their investigations to some forensic investigations. And obviously we'll have a problem, but when we have a problem, you have to convince us that you are capacitated enough to take the states. I know that in your second page of your presentation, you did talk about your costs, but those costs are not as convincing because, you know, remember the Minister of Communications when we met at SADC? What she said was that your costs are way too high. They are way too high than the costs of other investigators. So we would want to see that change in Chairperson in terms of your explanation, because in here it does not really talk to the costs, so that when we bring the departments in front of SCOPA, we can then on your behalf say to them, you do have capacity. You are not as expensive as they are saying you are, because these are the figures. But what you have explained here does not suffice to actually, it's not giving us that appetite to actually say to them, use SIU. But we need to have all those lists of the consultants that you have. And I think what my colleague said earlier on, that we can recruit people from as young as, you know, the young age from universities, so that the unskilled that you have talked about here can be reversed and find a way of correcting that. Thanks, Chair.
No, thanks. I think you covered a lot of areas, some of which have already been asked and covered, especially around capacity. We spoke very extensively around it. emanating from the annual report was merely a referral in support of an argument. So we don't necessarily have to say we did not bring our annual report with us, so we can't refer to it. But maybe pick on some of the issues that she has raised, but those that we've gone through, I'll take her through outside the meeting.
Now, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Chair, perhaps just to repeat, our resourcing model is around having full-time employees, and where it becomes apparent that we require, we need contract employees, we go that route. But I still say at the moment we don't have consultants doing forensic investigation as it used to be the case before. The service providers that the Honourable Member is referring to, we do have service providers like any other business. For example, you would have service providers to provide, you know, various services. We've got various business lines that would require SCM process. I just top of mind is that the page at the annual report that the Honourable Member would have referred to, SIU used to have consultants doing forensic investigation, and as part of that, we have identified that there were processes, SCM processes, that were not followed. But remember, this was really a complex environment that SIU used to administer the CARA funds, right? Criminal Asset Recovery Fund, right? And that's the fund that is held in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. And that fund is there for law enforcement agencies to use the fund to combat, you know, crime, including corruption. So in the past, SIU used to administer that fund. And part of what was done was to then source consultants, you know, to be allocated to ACTT. SIU was holding that fund to administer and assist ACTT to do the investigations. So our finding has been that in some of the instances, consultants were appointed not following a SCM process. And that's what we have identified in the annual report, and possibly as part of the area where we're dealing with irregular expenditure. But as I said, it has since come down because, you know, we've cleaned up that space. So SIU is no longer administering the CARA fund. The CARA fund has now been moved to be administered by the Department of Justice. But Chair, I need to just say here that our operating model, at no stage do we say we will never consider consultants to do the work. Our model in the main is to build in internal capacity and be able to execute the investigations. But yes, like any other business, there may be a business need at some point, you know, to consider consultants to do the work, which we will consider at that time and, you know, apply our minds. And it could be that there would be a need for a consultant, but at the moment, not. In terms of Liz's chair, yes, we do have predominantly the buildings that we occupy are leased.
How many and how much are you paying for that?
We've got offices in all the provinces that we operate, except Northern Cape. In all those offices, we lease. How much we pay? Again, Chair, with your permission, I don't have the figure at the moment in terms of how much are we paying per lease. Can
we ask the CFO to take us through that, because I think he will know.
the list of the non-paying departments should be almost ready.
Chair, so, honourable member, for the 2015-16 financial year, which you have the annual report of, for a total of 8 or 9 offices, including 2 offices in Eastern Cape, a total amount of 27.8 million was paid for premises lease.
I'm asking that, Chairperson. 27.8, that's for a year, isn't it? You are not the only entity. Are you called entity? That is doing that. Why is it a problem for us as government to have our own offices, which will work out cheaper in terms of payment, and you can do your vetting, and you know that it's clean offices, we have stripped them in terms of security to make sure that... That's why it's easy for anyone to come and break into your offices. Not only your office, but you know this elite police unit offices, they've been broken into. It's easy because you don't own those premises. Somebody else owns them on your behalf. So it's easy for them to come and break in. The 27 million that you are using for leases, we could do something else. You know, something else that can help you as a unit. But Chairperson, maybe when we ask about staff, just to be specific and let us understand, you are dealing with SABC right now. How many people are there, and how long does it take you to deal with a case, the turnaround time to deal with the case from the beginning up to the end, so that you make sure that whatever that you are doing can be included as part of your achievements, and actually say, this is the time, this is the period that you have made, this is how many people that are going to work with the investigation. Thanks,
Chet. Okay, no, that's fine. Once again, I will take it through, because it was discussed, so I don't want us to go there. But the non-paying departments, do we have them?
Yes, Chair, the last point around the costs. That the honourable member said they are way too high. I think one honourable member said, I'm sure the honourable member was outside, that he can attest, looking at the costs, that they are cheaper than the forensic. But we are satisfied that it's not high. Chair, in terms of the non-paying departments, there's a list that has been put in front of me here, which you can see, it's almost like, you know, a draft working document. I'm not happy to submit this to you now. I would like to do a proper submission.
Are they more than 10, more than 20?
Just by indication, yeah, there's much more than 10, more than 20, just by looking at it. But, Chair, with your permission, I would like to, you know, do a proper submission.
Okay, that's fine. So give us the name of the department or the entity, the amount, and the duration.
Okay, we'll do that.
Now 6 months, it's now 12 months.
We'll do that, Chair.
All right. I'm giving Kumrit Kika. No, Chair, I like your procedure because I'm the one who led the discussion. I must close the... I'm captured. Yes. No, Chair, I think maybe what we need to look at as my parting shot is we are saying the SIU is part of us. We are retained. Now, what is your view? I want us to look at a structure to try and institutionalize this whole thing. Do you perhaps have an idea as to how can we do this? Because we need you wherever we go. Earlier on, I spoke about a number of people criticizing us about
that is consequence management, not only as government. Now, hence, we took a decision that we need to partner, that is, with yourselves. Now, we don't want an ad hoc arrangement. I'm saying, just think about this whole thing. How are we going to structure this whole thing so that there's a formal relationship between us and yourselves as a team?
And then Ross, and then we're done. I'm actually surprised that you comrades seem to be still going after. No, in terms of your energy level. Okay, Comrade Shiloh, Ross, and then we tie it down. It's already almost 1 o'clock.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I just want to make it's not a follow-up, it's a clarity I advocate. When we're talking about the consultant and the response, therefore, you talked about the forensic accountants, and which maybe if I heard you correctly, you said you insource those specialized skills. I think if I got you correctly, you insource them. You don't outsource. Don't take them as service provider or either consultants. Advocate, when I asked the question, is that I knew that this area that you're operating on is a highly specialized skill. Which probably will need some of the services that you'll acquire them probably outside, beside your mandate stating what is it that you are doing. When you insource, let's take for instance, maybe, like I'm saying, it's a clarity, when you insource, do you insource somebody from the police service or somebody who's retired? And because you said you insource them on a contract basis. Let's take, for instance, you insource a Chilwani who's serving, who's a retire or who's in the employ of any other because of my own skills.
No way.
Chairperson, today I'm being answered by honorable members and it's not fair.
Yeah, I told you ignore them.
It is not fair.
No, continue.
Thank you. Yes, Chairperson. Advocate, I was asking before somebody attempt to answer on your behalf. Yes, because I think there are some, I don't know, let me put it in this way. Don't you have some other people who are servicing you, who are working as well in the police services, or do you have a relationship that you have? If maybe you can just explain on that one. Thank you. You get my question. And then on the proclamations, the numbers that you have provided in terms of the financial year, page 13 of the presentation. I was just trying to calculate in terms of the year period. Probably maybe here you've provided them in terms of from 2009 until 2007, which you've got about 81 cases. But I just wanted to get the clear indication, at least for 3 years. I think it will be 2014, 15, 16, the 3 year period. When I was making the calculation, I think it's about 50, but you'll just correct me in terms of in a 3 year period. I just wanted to find out how many cases have you completed in terms of that 3 year period. And then, these other cases that probably have lapsed if you have not concluded them. What is the status report? If an investigation has lapsed, in your own organization, what does it say? Is something that the president has proclaimed, an investigation that the president has proclaimed, does it just fall off? There's not any other report, and it will come back to the issue of payments to the other department chairs, and probably maybe we'll raise it in another engagement that you will have. But I just wanted to understand, in a three-year period, how many cases have you completed that are being completed as it is? And then if they are not completed in that three to four years, if they are not completed, what is the status quo of those investigations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Just to support the Honourable Kikana's proposal with regards to partnering with the SIU, I think it's an excellent proposition, you know, to put it on a more permanent basis, because we as a committee actually became very prominent when we extended our investigations with the law enforcement agencies. That's when we started turning the tide, and where entities and departments and other spheres of government really took notice of us. And it somehow might be scary for them to appear before us when there's an SIU member as well. But you will remember that we had the Hawks here, and that somehow fell apart. I don't see the Hawks always present anymore. The anti-corruption task team was at one stage on each and every meeting. And we would really appreciate it if there can be a delegated member to certain of our committees with regards to the SIU. I think it's an excellent proposal, and I'd like to support it wholeheartedly. Thank you so much.
Right. I think let's round this one off. Save to maybe just check a few things. The request for proclamation, has there ever been a request that was denied by the president? Number one. Number two, well, I think you spoke about this one, the turnaround time from application to approval, but from approval to gazetting, you spoke about civil litigation. You did not talk to the criminal part, you know, of it, and I'm linking that with your referral of cases to the NPA. Is that, how much of a challenge is that? You spoke about an MOU. Well, that says there are issues. What are those issues? What are those challenges? How many cases have you referred to the NPA that are outstanding in terms of them deciding whether to prosecute or not? And if you can remember how many they are, which one is the longest? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 4 years? And also, I think the issue around communication with the giving feedback to departments, I think that should not only happen for purposes of payment, you know. Because when we're the compensation fund, you know, you were investigating these advance payments for, I think, 460-something million. When we asked them, they said, well, we don't know how far this is, but the last payment we did was in August 2015. So our assumption was, okay, so if that was the date for the last payment, it means you were done. So from there until now, 2 years later, no communication, no information. And we almost ended up accusing the president of withholding the report. And yet, it's either you don't communicate or they will mislead us. I see on page 31, you're talking about municipalities, but the line on top, when it refers to Northwest Municipality. Now, I don't know why you condensed that and not be specific in terms of which municipalities you are investigating, because then it does not it does not give us a sense whether is it Madibeng and Rustenburg, or is it Itsowotla and Mahikeng, you know. Maybe I don't know if there's much you can say about the SABC. I'm sure it is one investigation of interest to us as a committee, because we have been waving the SABC around, but it is possible to turn things around. You see, this is what is happening, and now the SIU is on their case. Everything is going to be fine. So I think this opportunity should be used to confirm and give us a sense of, even if broad outlines, your approach to the work, if you have a sense of how long it will take, or you still need to do preliminary work and then be able to have a sense around it. I would like to just three things. I hand over to you so that we close the meeting. One, I think the issue of the special tribunals, I think it is an important area that does need to be focused on, because then gives the possibility to bring to fruition the recommendations that you make. Secondly, the issue of enhanced powers. I would imagine that the issue of the status of your recommendations, that should have been one of the top issues. Ross, that should have been one of the top issues, because even if you sort out your proclamation processes, then you do get all the proclamations, do the work, and then what? Because the issue of consequence management is the fundamental question. It's not so much lack of information, because even the Auditor General gives out a lot of information about what is wrong. And it is not as if departments don't know who has done what. They know it, and they know themselves. But it is at that point of then what. So I would imagine that from here, maybe, let's give that as food for thought. I think let's reprioritize the issues around your power. And as it is, I understand on Friday, the Committee on the Auditor General will actually be finalizing the bill that seeks to amend the Public Audit Act to say how do we ensure that the recommendations that the AG makes, especially around fruitless wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, you know, all those related stuff, are not just, you know, taken for granted. So I think within this current atmosphere, I think it could be an opportune moment to, you know, to also strike and say, this is what we want. Because I think looking at what you're doing, if we can tie that part out, I think the SIU would probably be the most effective organ the state has to fight against corruption. Because you do civil litigation, you do criminal referrals, and all of these are consequence management issues. And these are the things that are lacking in our system. So I would say that for me, that would be. But the last point, and I'm flagging it for you, but I'm also flagging it for us, comrades. I think it is fine that maybe when you have to investigate, the proclamation is made by the president. But would it not be correct that once the investigation is done, for purpose of oversight, the reports would actually come to Parliament than taking the reports back to the President? and for the executive to then oversee themselves over the wrongs that have happened there. I'm just saying there's a check and balance. Yes, the executive said investigate us, and once you've done the findings, then let Parliament see the rot that is there and to say, because then we have an interest in ensuring that whatever findings have been made, they're actually being followed up. Even if your powers are enhanced, but as Parliament, you know, the reports should directly come to us. Yes, send a copy to the President, send a copy to the Department, but let a copy come to Parliament. So Parliament can immediately also, you know, do its part. But the situation where the report goes to the President and then the President then send it to the Department and it ends there. I think it does not complete the cycle for me. So I want you to have that as food for thought, but even ourselves, comrades, I'm saying let's blink that one up. No, I'm saying let's have it, because then we need to then say, then what? What do we recommend? How do we take it forward? Right. And then the issue around us and you, I think Comrade Kisane spoke to it and Ross spoke to it. I think we'll look at mechanisms. No, there's no memorandum of understanding. When you're a state organ or parliament, it's a question of how do we institutionalize working, you know, working relationship. As Ross is saying, there are certain hearings where, you know, interacting with the Auditor General, we already see that there are lots of issues, you know, that need further follow-ups. Now, whether the enhanced powers of the Auditor General will take care of that, or whether it becomes instances where we say we need the SIU, I think those are matters that we may need to tie down going forward. But thanks very much for coming. I'll give you the opportunity to respond to one or two issues, and then we can wrap it up. Sure.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and honourable members, and thank you on the partnering with SCOPA. We would really appreciate that, and we'll take guidance from the committee in terms of how we institutionalize. We would really appreciate that, and would be willing to really be a partner in that case. Chair, again, in terms of the resourcing model, employment model of SIU, from the honourable member's question. Yes, we do have specialists that whenever there's a requirement, we insource. And this we would have done after we have assessed what is really the core, you know, business of SIU, with it being investigative. But in some instances, some of the projects would require specialized skills. By way of example, if we do an investigation, for example, for around the construction, you know, environment, you may require a quantity surveyor. You may require an engineer, right? In which case, if that's the case, we identify it, flag it, and we make a motivation, and those are the kind of specialized skills that we would get through the SCM process. Because we don't ordinarily employ quantity surveyors or engineers. Right? Coming to the forensic accountants, probably historically, was that those could probably fall into the similar category like your specialized as quantity surveyors and so on. But part of what we do on an ongoing basis is to analyze the statements, the figures. So a decision would have been taken that we need some internal capacity around the forensic accountants, and hence they're beginning to build up the capacity in that space. And but we have just realized that, I've said that we have realized that they are stretched, and then a business decision has been taken to improve on that space. So that is still a specialized skill, but it's a skill that is intimately part of the core business, because we continuously analyze, you know, statements and numbers and so on. So we would need a good capacity around that space. Okay. In terms of the question that the honourable member raised around the relationship with SAPS, yes, there is a relationship with SAPS. But in terms of our legislation, once we pick up that there's a need for criminal action to be taken, we then refer the matter to NPA, right? But as you would know, that for a matter to be prosecuted and taken through the process, you'd require a case docket, you'd require, you know, all of those administrative matters to be you know, complied with. So in the scheme of how this is done, the NPA would look at our evidence more often. We would have ensured that the evidence that we put together is sufficient to prove a crime that we have identified beyond reasonable doubt. But the NPA still has to satisfy themselves. In some instances, they still find that there's a need for further investigation, in which case they don't refer it back to us. They refer it to the police, then to do a further investigation and probably to register a docket and so on. In that case, we then, you know, collaborate with the police. Our investigators would work together with the police to ensure that proper investigation is done. So that's the kind of relationship that we have. We have a continuous relationship with them. The three-year period that the Honourable Member mentioned, Chair, was the average length of time that we have determined that it takes. And that's the kind of length of time that we want to reduce in improving the turnaround times. What happens to the investigation during that period? Theoretically, the investigations could go on and on. The proclamation does not, call it, expire. Theoretically, the investigation could go on and on. But, I mean, that doesn't make sense. And hence, our determination that, you know, if we keep on this trajectory of taking too long to investigate, we will not make the impact that's required, and hence the need to reduce the turnaround of the investigations. And issue mentioned by Honourable Ross around partnering, I think we've dealt with that. From the Chair's point of view, has there been a proclamation that has been declined? I'm not aware of any of the motivation that has been put through that has been declined to date. Criminal referrals. To date, our records are showing that we've got about 586 matters that we have referred to NPA. And part of the intention within the MOU space that we've signed is that this monitoring structure has to go detail into each and every of those cases and find out what has become. That is something that we have raised with the NPA. Giving feedback to state institutions, Chair, as I indicated earlier on, that although the report is by legislation, goes to the President, we do, because of what we have realized during this debt analysis and finding out why is it that they're not paid. Amongst others, these state institutions say, you know, we're paying you, but we're not getting the report. So as a mitigation, we've said we will give them, call it, statements around what has been the deliverables and what has been the outcomes, based on which they could then be satisfied that SIU has done work for them and that there's a basis to pay. Consequence management, yes, Chair, I do agree that that is the aspect that really requires attention. And will really be happy if this committee can also be seized in terms of how is it that it can contribute in that space of making sure that you know, consequence management is really effective. At the moment, as I said, it's more from the administrative function, the administrative head of a department or state institution is seized with the duty and fiduciary duty to ensure that the consequences are taken. But that's all that we have at the moment. We don't have a legislative, you know, push or assistance in that regard. So that's the only aspect that, and we take it care that it really needs to be prioritized. Shouldn't reports come to Parliament? I think that's the matter that the committee will be sort of sealed with. How many municipalities in Northwest? That was one proclamation, Chair, and that's why we're not itemizing them. But I'm sure it could probably make, you know, information sense to say which municipalities. But that proclamation dealt with about 24 municipalities in Northwest. How do we institutionalize the relationship with SCOPA? I think we've touched on that, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members.
A 5-second question. If we table an SIU report here and discuss it here, does that mean we can table it in the House? So we could actually bring SIU reports to the House. I don't think that's ever been done. I think that would be maybe a very interesting
thing. The SIU report, you mean a report arising out of this engagement?
No, I'm talking about if the SIU investigation. We receive a copy, we discuss it at committee. Can we then table that SIU Domini report in the House?
Well,
that's just a question.
Oh, okay. No, the proposal I'm making that the reports be referred to Parliament is essentially for that purpose, that a committee or ourselves discuss that report and then write a report to Parliament that is tabled in the House, discussed, debated, and adopted in the House.
Maybe what we need to do, you indicated yesterday that we'll be having a strat plan. I think this is one of the issues that we need to discuss and fine-tune it, that is at a strategic session.
Great. Right. Just just make sure you remember this issue when you go for a strat plan session so it's not lost. Yeah. Okay. Comrades,
I want to make a suggestion. Yesterday we turned back the Treasury report on deviation. I wanted to make a suggestion because I think we need to work together with committees to make sure that whatever that we're trying to achieve as SCOPA is actually implemented and we can see consequences. You know, we can see final results that can make all of us happy. I wanted to suggest that when we do have that meeting with Treasury. We need to call the chairpersons of different committees, have a meeting the whole day. It shouldn't be, you know, the kind of meetings that we have, and have the Treasury in the form of the minister and the DG. In that way, we all look at the deviations and find a way of exercising our power as parliament, and make, because the money bill gives us power as parliament to actually say at the end of the day, we can actually allocate budget, not the way it's done now. It's vice versa, where it should start in Parliament. And I think the deviations are done because of poor planning and that. So my suggestion would be, let's have that meeting, but let it be a formal meeting where all chairpersons are, and then we can have a meeting, deal with that report throughout the day. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Comrades, thank you very much. Advocate in the team, thank you very much. Sure. All right.
that's why.